Good morning. Welcome to the Mr. Relevant Podcast. It's Monday, December 13th, the morning after Washington's 27-20 loss to Dallas. Here to talk about that, it's the Micah Parsons to my Chase Young, Matt Terrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. The score wasn't as close as, I was shocked all over again when you told us the score. I cannot believe it wound up that close.
Yeah, 27-20 sounds like a competitive game.
Yeah, it sounds like an actual football game.
I guess get the throat clearing out of the way. It was a total ass kicking. Dallas dominated Washington yesterday. I am glad that Washington kept competing and like made it interesting at the end. I actually think it was somewhat miraculous that they had the ball at the end with the game on the line. Like they actually were driving for the tie and maybe even the win.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the Denver game. Teams sure do a lot of stupid stuff. What I've been trying to pay attention to is I try to watch and see things where I'm like, oh, if our team did that, I would claim that they were incompetent and that it was all Dan Snyder's fault and that nobody should be allowed to, you know, do such a thing in the NFL. And the number of other teams that do that same kind of horrible stuff is amazing. Why were the Cowboys throwing? Why were the Cowboys doing anything? Why was any of that happening at the end of the game?
I don't know. And Dak made some throws in that game, the Holcomb pick six being one of them, where if I was a Cowboys fan, I'd be like, bench him. this guy stinks. He can't be our franchise quarterback. Yet, I think universally it's held opinion that he's one of the top 5 or 10 quarterbacks in the league.
Oh, absolutely. I that's the one thing that gave me hope. It's funny because I don't know where you stood, but by the time Sunday rolled around, I was in full-on Eeyore mode. I was like, I don't understand why anybody thinks Washington can win this. When the line started inching even more towards Dallas, it was like, obviously, I don't know why we had optimism earlier in the week. And I was in full-on Eeyore mode. But the one thing that gave me hope for the future was that, yeah, Dak looks really human. I always think of him as great. I love Dak. I wanted them to try to offer on the, the franchise tag, just offer two first round picks for Dak. I was like, I love Dak. And so the fact that he looks this mediocre is the only thing that gives me hope for the last few games.
It was a truly awful game. I don't know. It was Dallas got up. Let's see. It was 18-0 at the half. And I think, What was the worst margin here? I'm trying to find it. Yes, they're up 24-0. Dallas is up 24-0 at the half. Sorry, I thought that was a third quarter score. The first half could not have been more one-sided. Like, absolutely nothing went right for Washington. It was, I mean, a lot of games are hard to watch. I think we're experts on that subject. The first half was as hard as it gets.
It was terrible. Often when we do these pods, I have either read something or listened to some of the other podcasts or whatever. Has anybody talked about if Heinicke, why he went into the injury tent the first time when Kyle Allen came in and ran for a first down, and then Heinicke came right back in? He never looked right to me at first. I didn't know what he went into the injury tent for, which is what my actual question is. But I was like, did he get concussed and now he's just making bad decisions? Did he get injured? And now, like, it looked like he should not have been back in that game. And this is not like a backup quarterback is always better hot take. This is something did not look right with him and he was not helping the team.
I think they just have like a little bar in there with like some shots and little, like, test tube shooters. I don't know. Just a quick nip back at it. I don't know, Heinicke looked awful, but the whole team, it was such a bad game where they got down early. The offensive line was giving no protection. He was erratic. He was holding onto the ball too long, floating it out there. I think my brother texted me, I didn't hear Greg Olson, the play-by or the color guy, say this, but Chris texted me to say that every single throw is described by Greg Olson as Heinicke floated it out there. And it's like, these aren't touch passes, bro. That's just the arm. That's the arm strength that we're dealing with. I don't really put this on him though. Like, it was just such a total team collapse.
I don't know. It just seems weird to me that Kyle Allen came in for one play and ran for a first down. And then Heineke came back in and did nothing for a while. And then Kyle Allen came back in and, like, he didn't look great. They would have lost no matter what. This is, again, I'm not losing my mind here, but he at least made the team look vaguely functional. I think something was real wrong with Heineke, and I think it's an unintended consequence of being a long shot quarterback, is you're even more inclined to claim you can play because your margin is razor thin.
Yeah, you got it out. I think it's definitely in the air that, like, they should have gone with Allen from that point, or certainly from halftime forward, regardless of the levels of effectiveness of either quarterback. But just the situation being what it was, it made sense to go to Allen at that point.
So you can blame that. You can blame DeAndre, what's his name? Why am I forgetting
Carter?
His name? Yeah.
DeAndre Carter?
Not making that catch right through his hands.
That was the last drive, right?
So they were that was the second seven. To last play, like, yeah.
So it was the last drive. They got the ball back with like 3 or 4 minutes, down 7, miraculously. And Allen put that ball on him, like 40 yards downfield.
Yeah, right through his hands.
Yeah. I think any catch where you're full stride trying to, you know, get under the ball with the defender right on your back is difficult, but that was like, that was a catch that should be made.
Yeah. I mean, on the relative scale, I would have dropped that ball, 103 out of 100 times, but an NFL wide receiver that he had to make that catch, which was sad, but then we would have found a different way to lose that game because that game deserved to be lost. I mean, it needed to, they did not deserve to win that game under any circumstances.
Absolutely. And that's part of why I was like so excited there at the end, because if they had somehow pulled it out, it would have been one of the all timers, it would have been Brunell on Monday night.
Good analogy.
I just wanted to, before I forget, I know we're jumping all over the place. With McLaurin out, how truly pathetic was the Washington offensive attack? I mean, it's not just that McLaurin's out. It's that Gibson fumbled, Thomas was injured to begin with. At the end of the game, I think the wide receiver group that they had out there was Cam Sims, DeAndre Carter, De'Ami Brown. Like, that's the group. And Kyle Allen, Sugarman.
And the running backs were Jarrett Patterson and somebody who, Jonathan someone?
Yes, Jonathan. I have never heard of him. What happened to our guy from last week, Wendell Smallwood? Or I think it was Wendell Smallwood.
Wendell Smallwood, I believe, was still on the team and I think was still active today. But I was watching the game and thinking about who Washington had in on offense and watching them move the ball. And if they had scored, even if they had just tied it, or if they had scored and then blown the 2-point conversion and lost by one, the Dallas media and Dallas fans would have justifiably lost their minds. You cannot let a third quarter preseason game roster do that to you in the fourth quarter. Like the guys that they have out there, it's kind of depressing. I don't even know what the word is. Horrifying. Who are these people and why are they playing?
It is a preseason group. And I mean, that's not, same thing goes for the offensive line. I don't know who most of these people are. It's like a threadbare, like every single position group is threadbare. Here's the top receivers from yesterday. I'll go yardage wise, because that's the way they're ranked. Cam Sims, Adam Humphries, Jonathan Williams, John Bates, DeAndre Carter, Jarrett Patterson, Ricky Seals-Jones. That's your top 7 or 8 receivers. Every one of those guys could be featured in a fourth preseason game.
Absolutely. And none of those guys are ones where when you looked at the preseason, starting roster, that you expected anything from. They're not even showing up on the list at this point. Man. I mean, It's grim out there. If this coaching staff continues to get any wins out of this team, it's going to be a truly heroic job.
Well, so that's there's a good and a bad news situation here. The good news is, despite the loss, Washington is still somehow the number 7 seed for the playoffs. They're still the last wild card in if the season ended today. I'm not even sure how, but they are. I think it's probably, you could probably boil it down to, like, if they win 3 out of 4, they're in. They win 3 out of 4 to get to 9-8.
Yes, although I think they have to win both of the games against Philly.
Okay, that might be the case. But let's just say, like, in broad strokes.
But thereabouts, in broad strokes, yeah. 3 out of 4. And obviously, given that they hold the position now, if they win out, somehow they're a playoff team.
Yeah, if they win out, I mean, they must be in, right, at 10 and
yeah.
7.
Yeah, because
if they go 3-4, 3-1, they're probably in. But there's some variables there. But I guess the bad news. okay, so I felt pretty good coming in today. Winners of 4 in a row, and they've beaten some decent teams in the process. I mean, Tampa Bay, Oakland, Seattle, Carolina, whatever. They're not like, I mean, Tampa Bay is obviously a contender. The other three are, you know, mixed bag. But felt pretty good. Felt really bad coming out of today, especially if McLaurin's hurt. How could this team win 3 out of 4?
I don't know. I don't know. There's part of me that is okay if they don't. I know you never root for the tank. I waffle a lot, but there's part of me that says picking 10 draft slots higher is more valuable to this team overall than losing a wild card game.
I
don't know. Like, I it's not that I want that to happen, but I will say if that's the way it goes down, I can certainly see the upside. I don't think I'll feel terrible about it.
I mean, I don't want to relitigate it. I'll just say, like, you're rooting for them getting like the 11th pick or the 10th pick instead of getting like the 20th pick.
Yeah, well, who was the 10th and 11th pick last year? Because I'm pretty sure one of them was Micah Parsons.
Yeah, Micah Parsons. You could say Mac Jones was up there. I mean, Justin Fields was in that range this year. Who knows? It's like, oh, we could get Desmond Ridder or whoever, you know, Matt Corral or whoever the quarterback is that's going in that range. But you just don't know. There's a million variables under the sun. And also, like, would you even have had the insight? Like, 10 teams passed on Micah Parsons last year.
Parsons was definitely
like Lawrence Taylor.
He was definitely the top guy on my draft board, except that I knew they weren't going to take him because of the character things, and it went against what Ron wants to do, what Rivera wants to do. But yes, no, I thought he was a slam dunk. Did I know he was going to be Lawrence Taylor? No, but he filled a need for this team, and he's great. Like, I knew that.
But you get my point. Like, it's the draft can be kind of a crapshoot, and of course you want the higher picks. I just can't root for Washington that, you know, like, slightly improve its chances.
Nor can I, but I'm just saying that if and when it happens, I will be able to take a significant amount of solace in that, especially because there's nothing more infuriating to me than watching Micah Parsons and knowing we're going to be watching for the next decade. And, like, that's what the effect Chase Young was supposed to have on a game. You alluded to this in your intro. Yes. It's infuriating to me to watch Micah Parsons and have Chase Young be like what he's been.
I mean, Chase Young certainly didn't have even one game like that this year before he got hurt.
No. And I don't think he had a game like that.
Not a dominant performance like that. I mean, he had flashes, I think, and certainly some like flash plays, but yeah, that was what you like. The way Micah Parsons played today is the way you would expect Chase Young to play, given his draft position and then all of the hype surrounding him, both coming into his rookie year, but then into this season as well.
Yep. I don't know how you watch on TV, but there are very few times where the way I watch is I find the specific defensive player I'm most afraid of and watch where he is at the snap of the ball and sort of see which way he's going and then have a sense of if the play is going toward or away from him. But Parsons is one where I was doing that. It's like you're actively wondering, how are they going to handle this guy on this play, and can they prevent him from wrecking everything? I'm not looking forward to that. I'm playing against him for a decade to come.
Minor element, totally meaningless. At one point, I think in the second quarter with them winning like whatever, 24-0, they showed him doing push-ups on the sidelines. And I just thought that shit was so hard. Like, I just thought that was awesome. If there's like a highlight reel of his season, even his career at the end, I could totally see that like being on it. Just as like a quick little, you know, piece of color, you know?
It's the kind of thing where when he does it and he's having that game, Yeah, it's awesome. If Chase Young had done it during one of his games this season, it would have been the cheesiest thing I had ever seen.
You've got to be up. I mean, they were up 24-0, and he was the star of the show at that moment. Yeah,
he was wrecking things. It reminds me. I think I've mentioned this already. I wound up watching the Steve Smith of Football Life on NFL Network.
And that's a good one.
Yeah, well, Steve Smith is one of my all-time favorite non-Washington players. I love that guy. And so much of the stuff in this Football Life, it was like, it's awesome because it's Steve Smith and he's awesome and he wound up being successful. But if it was, you know, I don't know, random receiver, you know, aspiring underdrafted guy number 12, you'd be like, shut up. Oh, my God, just stop. But because they're awesome, everything they do is awesome. And it all looks awesome when you put the right music behind it. And yes, you're correct. That's where Micah Parsons is going to wind up. Whereas Chase Young was on Family Feud, which is cool. Family Feud is cool.
I did not know that. So I was watching the game, but I wasn't like on social. And I don't really have friends. So I'm sitting there with my 11-year-old son, Miles, watching the game.
Oh, how'd he take it, man?
It was brutal. It just made it so much worse, you know, watching it with him, because it's so deeply felt. He doesn't, you know, he's not experienced in this like we are. But I didn't really have a sense of the crowd kind of, you know, special or different in any way. And I saw some people on my Breaking Tea work Slack were like, dude, the entire stadium is Dallas fans. This sounds like a home game. And I was kind of like, oh, well, that just happens at Washington games. You know, I mean, it's a weekly attended, you know, football team these days. And it's a transplant town. And there's always visiting fans there, especially Dallas. So, you know, nothing unusual there. But then, like, after the game, I saw it was reported that it was probably a majority Dallas fans in the building.
So what I
which
heard,
is wild to me. I don't know if I've ever heard of that ever in any, like, yeah, sure, at the end of the game, but like beginning of the game, most of the fans there were not Washington fans.
Well, what I heard to mitigate this at least slightly was that this game was starting to look like a sellout 3 weeks ago, before Washington went on their run and when Dallas was super hot. All the Dallas fans were buying up the tickets because they thought they were just going to get to see their team kick ass.
So
by the time Washington fans realized that maybe there was a reason to go to the game, that it was already a tough seat and it was tough to go to. I don't know if that makes it better or not, but at least there's some specific reason. But
yeah, that explains it. I mean, that's valid. If I was a season ticket holder, if I had, and Washington was 2-6 and Dallas is 6-2, I wouldn't want to go to a fucking game.
No. And to make it even worse, if I were a season ticket holder and had been a season ticket holder for the last, I don't know, 15 years, let's say, and this game, we reached the week before this game when secondary market prices were like ridiculously high. There were reports of like $10,000 tickets or whatever. Like it was actually a big ticket game. And I haven't been able to sell my tickets at a premium for 15 years, except for maybe a few weeks in 2012 or whatever. Like, I'm absolutely unloading those. Like, I'm trying to make up 15 years of losses in 1 week.
Well, I guess I should say where I'm coming from is I have no problem with any Washington fan that sold their ticket. It's the most understandable thing in the world. I don't even think this is relatively new information that it speaks on the franchise or anything like that. And I do think it was a combination of elements that led to it being a majority Dallas fans. I just think that's really notable. And I wish it was trackable, like not just attendance figures, but like how they break across team lines, because I'm not sure there's been like an away team that was more well represented perhaps in NFL history than yesterday.
I don't know. I mean, I just remember those Steelers games. I can think of at least two Steelers games at FedEx where they took over. Yeah. And apparently, I didn't realize how many seats FedEx had taken out. Apparently, they're under 70,000 capacity now, which is insane to me.
Yeah. Wasn't it once like 85, 90,000?
I thought it got up to like 90 plus. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, this is also like the week after Washington seemed to have a really strong presence in Vegas. And I think Vegas is probably one of those teams like Washington where there's always a lot of away fans there.
Well, there are. And if I were a Washington fan looking at this year's schedule and I had previously been a season ticket holder, I would have canceled my season tickets and taken the entire budget I put towards that and booked a trip to Vegas and had one live
Vegas
game
in December
plus a Vegas trip. Exactly. Yeah. I would much rather do that than go to friggin' Landover eight times.
Well, I think the other teams that suffer from this, I mean, Washington suffers because they suck, but also DC's got that, you know, transplant town factor. But L.A., like, I think Chargers games might challenge this record. Like, pretty much any time, like, Pittsburgh or Dallas comes to L.A., there might be a majority away fans.
Sure, but all of the transplant town thing for D.C. doesn't hold any water for me because of when the team was actually good, it was packed, and it was packed with actual, largely, people from D.C. and the immediate outlying suburbs.
Well, if your fan base is, like, strong enough and like frothy enough, like they're going to fill the house. But as soon as it's weak, then, you know, the transplants come in.
As soon as it's weak, or as soon as it's been weak for a quarter century. I mean,
I don't
know. Yeah. Like, what I'm curious about is how soon does the fan base stick around? Like, I always think of Baltimore, where there was a lot of resentment in Baltimore of the Colts for leaving, and there were a lot of people who had the sort of reaction when the Ravens showed up that people have towards the Redskins name change of like, this isn't really my team, I'm not into it. And then they win the Super Bowl within like whatever 2 years, and now it's one of the most rabid fan bases in the country. Like, would one single deep playoff run be enough to turn things around here, or would it take more than that?
I don't think it would be enough, but I think you felt it happen just this past offseason. Like, they made the playoffs in by the thinnest thread possible at 7-9, and then they lost in the first round. And they came into the season like really with no answer at quarterback, and there still felt like the fan base had been rejuvenated. Like, it felt not all the way back, obviously, but just from that, you could feel it trending up. If they had gone like 13-3 and made it to the Super Bowl, I think the fan base would be like losing its fucking mind, you know?
Well,
and had like Justin Herbert at quarterback or something. I think the fan base would be all the way back almost immediately. I mean, it might be a house of cards because, you know, the following season, you know, it was like an RG3 situation, you know, where it's like, oh, maybe we don't have a quarterback and they fall down and miss the playoffs, then sure. But yeah, it still feels like a sleeping giant.
But you want a pointless what if, man. You say they draft Justin Herbert instead of Chase Young, and then maybe they're in position to take Micah Parsons the next year.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Yeah.
What a pointless to think about, but I cannot believe the players that they have to start this year. I mean, they are. It didn't feel like an injury-ravaged season, I guess, right up until it did. But, they've just got nobody out there.
But did we even talk about Antonio Gibson and the fumble? I think you might have mentioned it.
I think you mentioned it. You mentioned it briefly. But we didn't talk about it in any detail.
Well, I just want to say, like, he's one of, like, the only bright spots on the team, given all the injuries and all the lack of performance. And then he, you know, just has another crucial fumble that just, it's like, the worst timing and the worst spot on the field, the worst game situation. I think this is his sixth fumble, but fourth fumble lost on the year, and he might lead the NFL in both.
And at least two, maybe three of those have been in similarly like game killing situations.
Yeah.
It's not great.
It's so tough. I had just stopped worrying every time he touched the ball. Because, like, you know, it's been a really good four-week stretch where he had, you know, like 25 touches on average over the four wins. And he didn't fumble, I don't think, during that stretch. Maybe he might have had one in there that wasn't, like, awful. I'm not sure. But anyways, I had just gotten over it. And almost immediately he fumbles.
Yeah. It's the only thing I cling to with him is Tiki Barber, who, for the first three or four years of his career was a fumbling disaster, and then fixed it and wound up being pretty darn good.
So. Hall of Famer. Well, yeah. But I should say, like, the fumble should not mask the fact that they could not run the ball today or yesterday, whatever. Like, they obviously, the pass rush, you know, they couldn't throw the ball. I think Heineke had two completions in the first half for like 14 yards. They couldn't throw it at all, but they couldn't run it either. Every time they ran it, it was like, oh shit, okay, now it's second and nine. You know, they just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, no, they were a complete and utter non-factor yesterday. I guess the big hope is that they got it out of their system, and that was all of the awfulness all at once, and now they can get better again. I don't know. Not what looking do you forward think, to playing the Eagles off a bye next week.
What do you think the line is on that game at Philly?
Do we
the battle of the two 6-7s?
Do we know Jalen Hurts' injury status? He was like questionable.
I think he's going to play. I don't know that it's like totally determined, but I think he is going to play.
I'd put it at Philly by 4.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I'm looking at. Philly by 4 with an over under of 43.5.
Yeah, that sounds about
would
right.
Would you rather me. Face would you rather face Jalen Hurts or Gardner Minshew?
Given Washington's specific limitations, I'd rather face Minshew. I think Hurts will kill them on the ground. I think it'll be like Daniel Jones in week whatever, 1 or 2 or whatever it was, times a billion. But I see your point. It's not like either one is going to be great.
Yeah, I think I'd rather face Hurts. I think didn't Hurts have trouble? Didn't we beat Hurts in Philly last December?
Well, that was the game where they benched him. And it depends who you ask. Anybody who is watching the statistics and tracking the actual metrics says that Hurts looked terrible and it was defensible to bench him. But I sure remember feeling like he wasn't doing great, but at any moment, he was the one thing that was going to be capable of beating Washington. So it depends what you mean.
I kind of want to see the Heineke Minshew Bowl because it's just two really fun quarterbacks to watch.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Hurts. Who would you rather Washington start, knowing what we know right now, Heineke or Allen?
So there's part of me that would like to see Allen get a game just to see, because I think you're at the point now where you're evaluating what any of these guys can be and if any of these guys have any real potential. And we've seen Heineke. I think we have a better sense of him. Yes, he could continue to improve, but he... You know, I think we have a sense there. And also, if he's even remotely injured, I don't think he's the kind of guy where I want to see him, flailing around out there limited. He's already limited enough to begin with. So I'd like to see Allen get a shot and just see what he can do. I want to reiterate, this is not like the backup is great, the backup is the answer, but it's like, who knows? Let's see. Let's at least get a sense of what his abilities are.
Well, I think you 100% are making this decision based on who gives you a better chance to win on Sunday. You're not doing, like, it's not evaluation time. Both of these guys are like high-end backups, low-end starters. I mean, extremely low-end starters.
I don't know that I believe that either of them, I guess they believe that Heineke gives them the better chance to win, and that's why he's been starting consistently. But I don't really think there's a huge difference between them.
I wonder, like, I feel like the fan base's relationship to these two guys, it's like very strong with Heineke and almost non-existent with Allen.
Well, and that's because Allen hasn't had a chance, right?
Right. I mean, and when he did play last year, it was during the throes of like what seemed like a lost season at the time, and it just didn't feel like it mattered. You know, like I don't even know if I was like really tuned into those games when Allen played. My sense as a fan, I think we feel like Heineke gives them a chance to win in part because like the team rallies around him and like the team is kind of on his side. But I don't know if that's actually true in any way. And even if it were, I don't know if it matters. I just don't have a sense of Allen. Like Allen's just kind of, he's kind of just a guy in my opinion, you know, in my like perception of it.
Well, he is kind of just a guy, but I feel like he's kind of just a guy. I feel like it's all narrative, basically. I feel like he and Heineke are at about the exact same level of performance, but the expectations for Heinicke were non-existent. There's a good story around him. So achieving this level is like impressive. Whereas Allen, they traded a draft pick for, he started a bunch of games in the NFL. He's had some good games. He's had some bad games. So like, whatever, he's just going to be what he is. And that's what he is. And it's not exciting. Heinicke, at least there's still a level of sort of surprise and excitement, but ultimately I don't know that it matters.
Even yesterday in like what was probably his worst game ever, and I don't know how it could be much worse, even in that situation, Heinicke had a moment yesterday where he hits Cam Sims on like the deep 50-50 ball for the touchdown. It's 24-6. And then on the two-point conversion, he basically, you know, replays the dive from the wild card game where he dives for the pylon and he got the 2 points. It's 24-8, and he's had his worst game ever. And still you're fired up. You know, and still you're like, that's Heinicke. That's the magic. It's so special with him in that unique way, like that specific way. And it's not that he's good. It's just, I think that's why I would rather see Heinicke than Allen. It's like, you just never know what's going to happen with him.
That's true. I will say that I missed that one live. I had switched over to Red Zone by that point and caught it when they aired it on Red Zone, but I did not have the full, you know, excitement.
The Heinicke experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
by the way, because I used the Kyle Allen experience in like a joking way. Just texting, because, you know, I think yesterday was one of those games where a lot of people turned it off. And then they kind of missed the good parts. And like, so my brothers were not watching when Kyle Allen fumbled at the end. So I was like trying to describe it. I was like, well, he fumbled, but like he wasn't really a forced fumble. You know, like it was kind of like a Kyle Allen experience, meager pass attempt that they ruled a fumble. It was actually like upsetting to me that is the play that ended the game, because I felt like it was one of those things like in baseball, you know, in baseball they implemented instant replay, and suddenly things that didn't happen in the game for like 130 years were now happening. Like if you slid into a base and your foot kind of like came off the bag for like a millisecond while the tag was being held on you, you were out. It's like physically impossible to like slide into a bag and maintain contact the entire time. It's, you know, whatever. That was like the Allen fumble. Like in live, he was clearly trying to throw the ball while like falling to the ground. And okay, maybe the ball started to come out before his hand was totally coming forward, but it's not like the ball went backward or whatever, or even like straight up in the air. Like he was clearly trying to throw the ball and just like lost control as he like in the throwing motion.
Yeah, I was genuinely shocked they didn't reverse it, because I just thought they'd want an interesting end to the game. I agree with you. It was one of those just bad endings to a sporting event where you're like, at least give me something exciting. If it had been intercepted, you'd be like, all right, well, fine, that was stupid, but okay. But this was just bad.
Well, I guess to complete my thought, I just feel like if officiating wasn't relying on replay, that would have been called an incomplete pass on the field to begin with. But because you're kind of referees are supposed to officiate in such a way that you can throw it to the booth, throw it to the replay, they rule it a fumble on the field, like sort of inconclusive, because when you slow it down frame by frame, like, yeah, sure, the ball was kind of coming out within the motion before the motion went forward. It just was like a super frustrating way. It was like disappointing and deflating, but also like made me angry, you know, because like,
yeah,
they still had a shot at that point.
Well, technically they still had a shot after that until they let, you know, Dak run for a first down. I think this is only going to get worse, because I think now that gambling is fully legal, or at least, you know, mostly legal, I'm not clear how to refer to it, but you know what I mean? Now that gambling is a part of mainstream culture, I think my argument in the old days was like, look, accept that human error is part of the thing, and right, get rid of a bunch of replay and, you know, it's fine. And it'll even out. But now you need everything to be as close to precise and as close to objective as possible, if you're going to be telling people that it's okay to wager money on this stuff. So, I think it's only going to get worse now.
I think, and I also agree that it probably should be that way. Like, it probably, if you have the technology, you probably should rely on it to make the right call. It's just that sort of play that it's like, dude, he's trying to throw the fucking ball. Like, he didn't get knocked out of his hands. It wasn't like he just dropped it. Like, he's under duress and he's throwing it.
Like, but I just think, I think at that point, you then need to steer all the way into that. And I think you need to spend a couple of off seasons, you know, using all these stupid technology things that they show you in commercials for Intel or whatever, of like, we know where the tip of the ball is, how fast it's going, and which way it is,
right,
and design metrics and be like, to be considered a forward pass, the ball needs to be traveling at X speed and X direction at such and such an angle to the line of scrimmage, and get rid of the stupid guys in the striped shirts, have a booth upstairs with a bunch of computers, and spit out what the correct call is. Like, I realize I'm making this sound incredibly easy and not like the end result of a whole lot of R&D and whatnot, but you got to move towards that. The example everybody always gives is the, like, well, you know, one guy looks and puts, like, here's where I think the ball was, and the other guy runs out with a stick on a chain and is like, oh, it doesn't quite reach the end of the stick. You need to do away with all of that.
Yes. Like, well, that's the most egregious. Yeah, that's the best example of this.
So, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, they should, you know, put sensors at every yard line on the field or all over the field and create a grid on the field and then sensors in the ball, and then we'll know exactly where it is and you know, if it broke the plane. Like, if you're going to make it exact, make it exact. But this middle ground is just stupid.
Well, on this subject is the Heinicke fumble that went for six, the scoop and score that Dallas had. The only views of that I saw, it looked like the ground caused the fumble to me. He got slammed on his back and the ball popped out. I that's all I saw. My brother said they did show another angle where it's clearly a fumble, but I did not see that. Washington didn't challenge it, but that was a huge play.
Well, I also, similarly, I thought they missed the extra point. I thought Dallas missed the extra point, the one that they kicked. I thought it went wide left.
I did not see the extra point, but they ruled it good.
And yeah, they ruled it good. And then I saw a couple people tweeting it, the same thing, that because I searched. I was like, did I just like totally miss see that? And a couple people had screenshots where it sure looked like it was a miss, but it was like, whatever. guess it is what it is.
Well,
and, you know, it wouldn't have mattered, but still.
We talked about how bad Heinicke was, but there's the two turnovers, like the fumble that went for six. Totally avoidable. That was Rush was coming right at him. Like, you got to figure out what to do with the ball there. You know, you either got to get rid of it or you got to cover it up. But for that to turn into a touchdown the other way was very avoidable. And then also the pick that he had on the screen pass, great play by the defensive end, whoever that was, Gregory, I think. But dude, it's one thing to throw a pick downfield. There's a lot going on. You might not see a guy. Maybe you're inaccurate. A guy breaks the wrong way, but on a screen pass to give up a pick, I mean, you just got to be better than that. That was, I thought, a really bad interception in that specific way.
So here's my question: we've talked about what like the realistic the numbers are and what they have to do. How do you feel? What right now? Do you feel like they're gonna find a way to sort of pull it together and slide into the playoffs? What do you think?
I think they're going to win one or two games and miss the playoffs. I think they're going to, you know, maybe they beat New York, but by that point, I think they're going to be out of it. I think they will have, you know, lost a couple more games to Philly and Dallas and probably be out of it. They just seem so outmanned at this point. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how you could expect them to win, you know, win three or four of these remaining games. That seems unrealistic.
I wish you and I could remember this, because it seems likely that they are going to, in fact, finish 7-10, 8-9, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Which is exactly where we both predicted them at the start of the season or thereabouts.
I think I had them at like 9-8. I think that was. But if you told me all these guys would have gotten injured, I would have said like 3-14.
And they could still go 9-8 and miss and conceivably miss the playoffs. I feel like when we make these 8-8, now 9-8, 8-9 picks, in our heads, it's like win, lose, win, lose, win, lose, win, lose, mediocrity the whole way through. But that's not the way it goes. It's like they're streaky. And I wish I could remember this when it's actually happening and not looking back on it. Because I feel like I do the same damn thing every year and just believe the runs and don't believe the overall picture.
Yeah, I mean, with all the injuries, I would have been happy with 7 or 8 wins. Or maybe with all the injuries, I would have been like, okay, let's go in tank mode so we can get the best quarterback in the draft.
I don't think you ever go to tank mode. I don't believe that.
If you were to say that Fitzpatrick's going to miss the entire season, and Chase Young and Montez Sweat are going to be out, miss most of the season, and Samuels will never play, and whatever on and on down the line, I mean, I would just think it was a lost season.
And it yet
definitely, I would definitely. If you had told me all that on September 1, I definitely would have thought this would have been like a 3-14 season from hell. For sure. With Heinicke as your QB the whole season, and with your 2-star defensive ends out the whole season, and your star wide out that come, or not star wide, but your big free agent signing is a zero. Like all of that, I would have thought it would have been a 3-win season.
Well, by that standard, they've excelled. What a remarkable team.
Well, one thing was I saw ESPN Sunday NFL countdown, and they were talking about the 4-game win streak. There was a lot of talk about Washington Dallas, which was nice. But it was like, oh, they've won 4 games, but who have they played? And these quarterbacks they've gone up against are, you know, of course they've won 4 games. Like, okay, first of all, Washington has its backup quarterback playing for them. Second of all, they beat fucking Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. And Derek Carr and Cam Newton, whatever. That was the 4 quarterbacks. Like, I just didn't understand that at all.
And the Cam Newton thing, I feel like it's easy to look at both in the abstract and in the specifics of how he has played since. But he was fired up for that game. It was Cam back in Carolina against Ron. Like, that was if there was ever a game to fear Cam Newton, it was going to be that one. Yes. I don't know, man. Morale is back to being low again, I'm afraid.
Well, I'm okay. I think I don't expect them to win 3 or 4 and make the playoffs, but it's in play. And right now, the season ended today. They're in the playoffs. They've got a shot. It's December 13th, and Washington is still hanging on. I'm happy about that.
I guess what I need to see, I guess when I say morale is low, because of the number of injuries coming out of that last game, because of how sort of hapless they looked the whole game, I'm just, unlike going into this week where while I was worried and I thought they were outmatched, at least they had been playing good and exciting football, I'm now like, I'm almost afraid to see what it's going to look like next week. I'm afraid they're going to come out and look just as like, I don't know, impotent as they did this past week. Yeah. And it's like, it wasn't enjoyable to watch. I don't mind watching a game where they lose, but watching that first half was just, it was brutal. It was unpleasant to watch.
This is why I'm so glad that they battled back at the end. That easily could have been like a 42-7 result where you just have nothing to feel good about or like energetic about coming out of it, and at least they came back. And like 27-20 doesn't sound too bad, and they're just not completely hangdog going into Philly.
Well, I will try also not to be completely hangdog.
Yeah, I don't. Is that something somebody says? I know there's like a hangdog expression.
I'm
using that as an adjective. Like hangdog is like you're just, you know, down in the dumps, feeling real shitty about yourself.
I just figure it fits with my general sort of Eeyore-ish demeanor. So I was just rolling with it. I liked it.
All right.
You got anything else going on?
Succession finale last night. That was pretty intense.
I still haven't pretty watched fun. Succession. I'm still having my knee jerk, like everybody's talking about it. I can't be bothered reaction to it. So. But everybody seems to think it was great.
I don't know that I would recommend it as like a binge after the fact. I think it's really fun and spicy to watch it while it's airing, you know, sequentially or whatever, linear, I don't know, whatever, where people have a week to talk about it. I don't know that I would enjoy it nearly as much just like on my own binging it, nor would I really want to spend that much time in this world in like a condensed period of time.
That is interesting to hear, because I had a similar thing with Breaking Bad, where I liked it fine, but I came to it really late. I missed most of week to week on it, and I was like, it's fine, but like I don't know that I get all the fuss. So that's interesting.
I think I would rather. I mean, this is why I enjoy when shit's on like HBO instead of like Netflix when it just dumps. Is like. I think I'd rather watch a good show that's getting a lot of like prestige TV treatment and chatter as it airs originally, you know, weekly, versus an even better show that's already been aired and nobody's talking about it and I'm binging it, you know, all at once. I think I'd rather watch the first one, an inferior show with the, you know, overall experience.
Totally agreed. In my case right now, I don't know if you're doing one of your intermittent dives into the Marvel universe, but like Hawkeye is currently airing week to week on Disney Plus. And first of all, I'm enjoying it because I think it's been one of the better Marvel Disney shows or whatever you want to call them. But like the week to week thing is such a huge part of it. It's like, it's fun. It's fun to speculate. It's fun to think back on the episode. It's fun to like look forward to it. It makes what you used to be just normal, the way we watch TV, feel almost like an event. Like we're all sitting around the same day watching a show. Like that's cool. That's fun. I don't know.
But I'm liking. How many episodes are we into Hawkeye?
We are, I believe, 4 in with 2 remaining. So
we'll see. I might try to play catch up on that.
I will tell you, while I say I'm really liking it, it definitely picks up exponentially with episodes 3 and 4. So if you feel like episode 1 is a slog, you can press on. And they're only like, I think, 30 to 40 minute episodes. So it's not
good.
It's not quite the dreary mess that, which one was it? Was it Falcon and Winter Soldier? That was just like, oh my God. Anyway,
I tried that one for like, I think I did one episode and I was out. Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that one, I watched the whole thing, and I think I enjoyed almost none of it. So that was cool. That's good.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, better times ahead, hopefully, this week in Philly. I'll talk to you after.
Talk to you. Bye. Yeah.